I have this here for a purpose, and then I made a few notes here that I can glance at.
I've gone ahead and turned it on so that it'll get going. And if you don't care, just before you start, state your name and the years that you were at the settlement school. Just whenever you're ready.
My name when I went to Highland Settlement School was Ruby Dean Bolin. Now it's Ruby Dean Bolin Allen. I went to Highland in the fall of 1928. A road had not even been built into Hindman from Dwarf. We had to go part of the way in the creek in what they called a mail hack, which was new to me. But then I stayed until I graduated in 1934. So 6 years is what I spent at Hindman. And you can see why it's a second home to me, really. Mm-hmm. Because when you go to a settlement school, you no longer have the parents' relationship. You are with other people, and it does become your home, you know. Of course, the parents keep up with you and write you letters, and you go home on vacations. I don't mean that you get rid of your parents, but as you live day by day, you don't have the parents looking over you. But I remember so well when my father took us to Hindman to ask Miss Stone if she had room for the three of us. Mm-hmm. My brother was one older. He was graduated in the class of 33. My little sister was just 8 years old and maybe a little bit young to go because it was a little bit harder for her to adjust. But I just want to, I think this that I wrote about my first going to Hindman will express it better than I can tell you.
Fine.
It was growing dark on that Sunday in August 1928 when I first met her. May Stone, co-founder of Hindman Settlement School. Papa had led the three of us, my brother 12, my sister 8, and me 11, on the cobblestone paths and up the steep wooden steps to Hillside to find her. The three of us sat on the short, unpainted bench in her office and listened as the two of them discussed whether there was room in the dormitories for us to live and attend school, which was to start the very next morning. This was on the Sunday night before school was to start on Monday. My father had been in the first graduating class in 1911. This was where he wanted us to be. The picture of her that night remains vivid still, her white hair flat and wavy above her low forehead and drawn back into a bun. The gold chain hanging from her pince-nez glasses over blue eyes that were pleasant, alert, surveying, but also accepting. Her gentle low voice, her blue and white flower dress with its white lace collar, her matronly buxom figure. I had never felt so dignified a presence. It exuded from her and filled me with awe. It did not take long for her to tell Papa that she would make room for us, ask if he would speak at the opening exercises of school the next morning, and directed him to the dormitories that would be our home for the next few years. That night we started to incur a debt we would never be able to pay. We had entered a new world. And Cassie, one of the advantages of being older, I'm now 80, I'm going to be 81 in August, one of the advantages of being older is you can... There are not many advantages, but this is one of them. You can look back over your life and see the decisions you made and the things that happened and how one thing led to another and so forth. And I am just so grateful that they put us there. I never really understood for sure. I think especially one teacher seemed to resent the fact that we were there since we had come from Hazard, where they had schools nearby, you know. But I think Miss Stone was very understanding and realized that my father was on very rough times with four children and renting and trying to practice law right near the Depression, you know. In fact, once I asked Miss Watts when I visited her in Knoxville at the retirement home, I said, "Miss Watts, you know, I can't remember much about the Depression We never heard it discussed at Hindman. How did you all do? And how did you keep us all up? How did you feed us when we were there in the Depression? And she, you know what she said? She said, well, we had this wonderful man in town, Lige Hicks, who ran a grocery store, and he would just let us run the credit until we got enough money to pay for it. Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful.
Well, on the, I'll just get rid of these little pieces that I have written these things.
Yeah.
And I thought, as when I saw that you were coming, I thought, well, maybe... In fact, I wish I could give you a copy of this. This is the letter I wrote to Miss Watts on her 100th birthday. Mm-hmm. My husband had had a stroke and a heart attack, and I couldn't go to Tennessee. But I did so want to. And so I have said to her in this, I, of course, congratulate her. The settlement was my home for only 6 of those 81 years. But it laid the groundwork for my life, fashioning me into the person I was to become. You, Miss Watts, were central to that training. Memories come flooding back. Thank you. And here I have a list of the things that I really, this came from the heart. Little Colonel stories you read to us and taught us to love. See, we lived at Hillside, and this wonderful person who was so busy and burdened with so many worries would gather us. I think there may have been about 8 girls at Hillside who lived there up on the same floor where Miss Watts' room was. Her office was downstairs. But she would gather us, tired as she was, on every Tuesday night, and we would get together and sing ballads. And she helped us compose a whole little collection of old folk ballads. But then also, she read to us the Little Colonel stories. That was a series of this wealthy little Southern girl, they were so interesting. I can just see her now and listen. I can almost hear her voice reading those stories. It was a different world from what ours was, but I guess she was trying to broaden our view and know that there was life like that outside. Mm-hmm. Now, someone wrote a book, I wish I could remember the title and the author, but he criticized settlement schools for trying to uproot us out of our culture and give us do you happen to know the name of that book?
I'm trying to think. I've heard my dad talk about it before.
But because of this letter that I wrote to Miss Watts, I don't know how he learned it that I had said it, but he puts me in the index. He quotes me, and that she had read us Little Colonel stories, and how awful that was because she was trying to rip us out of our own backgrounds and give us I tell you, none of us had much of a background that would have been dangerous. I mean, bad to rip us out of. But I resent that criticism. He really didn't know what he was talking about. They gave us a whole new world, and that'll come out, I hope, in this interview, the things that I'm really grateful for. But I was thanking her specifically for these Little Colonel stories and for the ballads you taught us and typed. She typed them herself for our little collections. Mm-hmm. And bowls of hot cereal served on wintry depression mornings. I can just see her now. We sat, Cassie, 10 at a table, what we called a lady on each end. We didn't call them teachers, we called them ladies. Mm-hmm. And then there were 5 students on a side. And so the hot cereal would sit in front of her and she would serve our bowls and pass them down. Thanked her for spring tulip beds, purple iris, and pink pennies for graduation. The path from the orchard house over to the cabin, I can see it now, just lined in the spring with these beautiful deep purple iris on both sides. And then for graduation, caps and gowns hadn't come in yet, mm-hmm. 1933. In fact, class rings had never been heard of by most of us, but one girl in our class who must have had a little money had the class mm-hmm. ring. We thought she was kind of strange that she would want a ring. But anyway, for graduation, the girls wore white dresses and carried 3 pennies, maybe a white and a red and a pink, those colors, but we carried three. And I just think back to how beautiful we must have looked, really, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the fellas, of course, had to wear their suits. But another thing I wanted to thank her for was silent climbs up Rest House Hill on Easter mornings to greet the sun. We would go up that little cow path of cobblestones. There was a house up there then called Rest House, where teachers would go to get away, I guess, on weekends sometimes and do their own cooking and relax. You see, folk games came to Hyman after I left, so there's a recreation house up there, I think, now, and Rest House is long since gone. But we would file. Nobody spoke a word. We went single file, and we lined up. I don't know if we'd rehearsed. I don't think we'd rehearsed, but we lined up all in facing the east. And then someone who knew when would start an Easter song. We would sing that. And then throughout the group, somebody had been asked to read a scripture. Mm-hmm. And still as we were facing, nobody up front directing us. I shall never forget that. And, well, a friend who lives on the same street, Sophie Holliday, mm-hmm. said, well, Hyman has just ruined me for sunrise services. She meant that she could never find another one as satisfying as that was.
Yeah.
And then we would file downhill, and on Easter mornings we had scrambled eggs. That was a treat. We didn't have scrambled eggs any other time except uh-huh. then. And I wanted to thank her for that. And then Sunday evening prayers, hymns, and scripture to cherish. Sunday night for supper, we didn't sit around the tables. We sat in those beautiful homemade chairs, handmade chairs, facing each other, rows. And she would sit in the middle of the row, of one row, and we would either be facing her or be sitting by her. And those scriptures that she would read to us stick with me to this day. And the songs that we sang. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes there would be little printed leaflets, but they were just simply, became just a part of us. And then, of course, breathless Christmas mornings with stockings, presents galore. Stocking presents galore. As Mildred Davidson once said, we had a pillowcase full of toys. And that, it was just so wonderful. And even if you were a senior, you got a doll. I liked that because I love dolls. But then this was sweet, huddling around your radio to hear Big Ben striking all across the Atlantic. Now, you see, the radio had just come in. There was television had not been heard of, at least in Kentucky Mountains. And so she would ask us to come down, and in her office room there at Hillside, we could hear that Big Ben in London striking. Mm-hmm. And we just thought that was nothing could be more, technology had fulfilled its purpose. We didn't think there would ever be any more developments in technology. The list is endless, a herald to the fact that the settlement answered the needs of a growing girl. And that's what it did. It answered the needs of a growing girl, values, acceptance, and ambition. I said a moment ago that we were taken away from our parents, of course, voluntarily. But I was thinking, I never heard a child scolded. I never felt all those 6 years anything except acceptance by anybody. And Miss Watts, they were really in charge of Hyman Settlement School at Hyman High School at that time. They were supplying the teachers for the Hyman High School. And that was a wonderful thing because she was importing people from all different states, people who wanted to come, and I'm sure they didn't get paid very much. And so they brought with them their own cultures and attitudes, and that broadened our horizon. And furthermore, they were better trained for teaching because Kentucky hadn't had time to do much with teacher training. And so I think that was really, being a teacher myself and knowing a lot of graduate schools and how teacher training has been in the past, I think that was a very wise thing they did. Mm-hmm. And they were just such wonderful people. And even in the classroom, always acceptance. Never looked down upon, never felt to feel in, made to feel inferior. I think that is marvelous. Because you've seen movies and so forth in boarding schools where they're always never a cross word from anybody. Now that is something. If I had been home, I'd probably have gotten some cross words from my mother occasionally. But there must have been wearying days for you along the way, Miss Watts. This settlement girl is grateful that day after day, year after year, you kept on. Your stamina and commitment were as firm and steady as the rock-filled hills nestling the settlement. Therein lies your greatness, Miss Watts. Please admit it, accept it, and glory in it, as I and countless others do for you on this very special day. And I signed it Ruby Dean because that's what everybody called me back then. And I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to read any more, but that's what I did want to pass those along because it states it better than I could have myself. And I really, I believe that Jesse Stoddard has a copy of this, Room for the Wagon. Have you heard that beautiful story of Miss Stone on the way to the Hyman Settlement?
I've read some of it, yeah. I know about it.
And a man was by the road with his children.
Uh-huh.
And they made room in the wagon. Well, you see, that's what she did for us that night. She made room. Even though school was to start the next day, it must have been exasperating to have three more children walk in the door. And I don't understand why we'd been over to see my grandmother that weekend. We didn't even know that we were coming to Hyman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that we were even aware that's what we were going to do. But, and I imagine it was, in a way, a hard decision for him to, but I think it was financial problems is what I think it was at home. And he saw that we couldn't cope with the expenses of living in Hazard at that time. But the things that I have listed, I've already mentioned the staff and how they were just models for us. And they did such wonderful things for us. They influenced us by their friendliness, by their speech. You know, I can still remember how I've learned a little bit about dialects. I remember it's made me very sensitive about dialects in my English. In fact, I taught a unit in dialects when I was in Louisville. Because they say that Eastern Kentuckians are very sensitive to different dialects because they're a little worried about their own. But then I learned that everybody speaks in a dialect, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but anyway, I learned that Pennsylvanians spoke just the way Miss Carter did. She was a lovely English teacher. And she pronounced her WHs just the way they do in Pennsylvania. Where were you? Where were you that night? You know, they don't say huh. They don't do the huh sound the way we do down here. But then they would do so many extras for us. They would take us on walks into the hills. On Sunday afternoons, we'd have a quiet hour. I thought that was good. They'd get us lying down and resting. We called it a quiet hour. And we would sometimes go to the hills. I have a picture of in my eighth grade up there. We're just sitting on stones, and some fellows were with us, and we just looked so happy. Our lives stretching out before us, you know. And those ladies didn't have to do that, but that was just something they wanted us to enjoy. Sometimes they would take us down the highway, and we would walk as far down as Ogden. I don't know if you know where Ogden is or not.
Yeah.
But and then when I was even in little girl's house, when I first went, I guess Miss Stone, because my sister was just 8 years old, thought that I should be in the little girl's house with her, and that pleased me. She slept on the top bunk. And I remember one night they got us all up. I don't know whether maybe just the older ones of us. But we and let us go up to a woman's room to watch the eclipse of the moon. And I had never even heard of an eclipse. I didn't know what one was. But just think of how awesome that was. Awesome in the old sense.
Yeah.
And how unselfish it was of them to give us that experience.
Yeah.
And then, on top of that, they asked us to write it up. And my first sense of pride was when my description of the eclipse of the moon was put in the little booklet that they put out. Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember the color yet. It was yellow pages with a green cover. And it proved several things to me. It made me feel like a Hemingway, you know. Because, but I had had a very good background the first 6 years in Hazard in grammar. And I think that...
There you go.
And then, you know, when I was in Orchard House, this lovely Miss Gallagher, oh dear, she picked out four of us girls and taught us to knit and bought us enough yarn for a little short sleeve sweater, and she chose the color. We were all in the same class. Maybe we were seniors, I'm not sure. I guess it was a little touchy. Imagine she figured out how to make the others not feel slighted, you know. Yeah. But she chose the colors to suit us. I remember mine was yellow, you know. Uh-huh. And I don't know how many times we went to her room, and we all ended up with this hand-knit sweater that we had done. And I just could go on and on about the extra things that they did for us. Just their kind, their extreme kindness. And just making us feel at home and accepted and never making us inferior. I still have a beautiful ring that Rachel McElwain gave to me. She was one of the secretaries at the Orchard House. Mm-hmm. And she just gave it to me because she wanted me to have it. I guess I was a senior. And she knew that it was something that I could never buy for myself. And so you just have lasting memories of these people. And then I was thinking, I'm not letting you talk much. Would you like to ask me a question?
No, that's fine. You just keep going.
Well, I was thinking, I'll run down this first. Wordsworth speaks of spots of time. And when you get this old, you look back over, there are spots of time that just stand out over the others.
Yeah.
And I have already mentioned the sunrise services. They were absolutely, when the sun came up, just imagine how wonderful that feeling was. Us all standing there facing the, I think more of the dining room, I guess, than any other place around the table. And they, I guess, to have 10 teenagers sitting around your table, you wonder what you're going to talk about. So we would play games around the table. We played Ghost. Have you ever played Ghost?
Uh-uh.
A word game. You start a word, and the aim is to not end it, because if you end it, then you've lost, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to drop out of it. And so we played that, and then sometimes we would come up with, I remember one time we were picking out things from the Bible and just giving initials and make everybody guess what it was. Like the A would stand for the ark, you know. I came up with COMC. Coat of many colors, you know. I think somebody guessed it. And I can, another spot of time is study hall in the Orchard House. And we actually studied. If we didn't study, we read. And
that, was that something you had to do every day?
Every night. Well, I'm not sure about Friday night. I'm not sure when we had study hall on. I don't remember that, but I just remember I can see exactly where that table was and where my chair was. Study hall. I don't remember how much it lasted. But then I can see us on the circle. I miss the circle when I go back. What we call the circle, that is the area right in front of Orchard House and Eastover in the hospital hillside. We called it the circle. It was not a circle, but it was the beautiful lawn. And in the middle of it was a well. I'm sure your father can tell what happened to that well. But the big stone wall around it. And we would go up there and sit on that wall after supper and sing. Always singing at Hindman. Always singing. I think that's where I learned so much about where I got the love of music. Of course, I had come from a singing family, mm-hmm. but we sang in the circle, and June Johnson could play a guitar, okay, and we could harmonize. And I think of how that music must have reverberated, you know, all, because in the hills, you know, you do have more reverberation of sounds. And I have a feeling that the ladies enjoyed that. Another spot of time is on Miss Cobb's porch, and it can't be anybody else except Miss Cobb's. The second porch up in the hillside, big long, and Miss Stone used to sit over in the corner of it. She would sit there, and where she could survey the whole settlement. I often thought when I'd see her there what she was thinking of, you know, as she, you know, the story of how they lived in tents when they first came, and young men shot up the town. Well, that was the kind of culture we had here, and so I don't blame them at all for trying to lift us up out of that. But Miss Cobb slept out there. She slept out on that porch. She had a cot there. And when I was a senior, I had the best job of all. I got to work at Hillside. And I was a big boss of all the other girls, you know. I was in charge of all the others who worked under me. I felt very much like an executive. And because the place was had to be kept spotless, you know. We actually scrubbed the floors with soap and water and then rinse them with cloths, and we didn't object. I've never heard a child complain about working. Never. Yeah. We just were glad to. Somehow we knew that we were only paying $10 a semester for tuition.
Yeah.
Just $10, and so things were kept spotless. But I can remember going out there to wake. My job was to wake everybody up. Miss Cobb's would be out there, and I think now in the zero weather, if they'd talk her into staying inside, please stay inside. But she loved that fresh air. It was not screened in, you know. I've actually can remember some dust of snow on her covers, you know. She would still be there. Then, speaking of singing, after supper, the teachers bonded with us, some more than others. I can remember the Man's Heart girls that were from California. One taught me my first note on the keyboard. She was the pianist, and then the sister was an elementary teacher. But I can remember our sitting on the porch of Hillside after supper, singing and harmonizing. And it was the steps and the porch were painted bright orange, which blended so beautifully with the brown of the building, you know. But I can just remember one song we sang, and I'm just going to sing a little verse of it, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead.
In the evening by the moonlight, you could hear the band, dark is singing.
Okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
We might want to move.
But just think of how this sounded with all of us young girls. And I've always said that Eastern Kentucky children can sing. When babies, some babies are slapped on the back, they cry, but Eastern Kentucky babies start singing. I used to tell my glee club that. And I think that this love of singing that I had, and then I did have a glee club at Napier High School. And I think it's just a girls' chorus. But we sang at Hammond Selma School. They invited us to come over once. We went to Lee's College, and we sang in the churches and in the drive-ins, sunrise services. And I'm sure that it was rooted right in there. But anyway, this one of the songs that they we sang on the steps at Orchard at Hillside, I remember. In the evening by the moonlight, you could hear the darkies singing. In the evening by the moonlight, you could hear the banjos ringing. How the old folks did enjoy it. They would sit all night and listen as we sang in the moonlight. That tune has just haunted me all the way down. It belongs right there on that porch at Hillside.
Yeah.
and then in the circle, and then we had this lovely man's heart lady had a glee club too, and we didn't sing songs that were familiar to us. They were more or less classical excerpts, like Cheer Beer Ben, and taken from the classical music, you know, and I think that she realized that Eastern Kentucky girls could sing, and that's what she helped us to do.
Well, I thought it sounded just fine.
Well, it's a lovely little tune.
Yeah.
I think that really the settlement was so beautiful in its simplicity. And I think that really I got my love of the simple life there. I don't really have never really yearned for the richer things, you know. Mm-hmm. Handmade things, quilts and so forth, homemade furniture, because Mr. Amberger used to have the shop over there. And my brother, we were talking about my brother Charles Boland, who went there. His prized possession is a little bureau of drawers, maybe four big drawers. It's his prized possession in his home now. And I imagine his four daughters are going to fight over it whenever he's gone, unless he puts it in his will. But and I think that it also, I wasn't as conscious of the hills at home in Hazard. Of course, we have hills all around us, but I learned the love of the hills, too. I can remember now, I'm not just spoofing here, this is really true. At that age, with this spiritual training that they somehow had imparted to us, just with our prayers at the dinner table, our Sunday night devotions, and we were allowed to go to church in the mornings, and then those sunrise services, they attended to our spiritual needs without being preachy or coercive. And I can remember standing on Miss Cobb's porch, where Miss Stone used to sit too, all by myself out there, and looking up that hill. I can see the rim of it now. And just saying, I will lift mine eyes unto the hills, the psalm. Mm-hmm. Now, this is for a teenage girl. I graduated when I was 16.
Oh, wow.
And, I was going to be 17 in August, but it sounds better.
Yeah,
but I just am thankful for that. And I wonder, I wasn't perfect, you know. I wasn't I had my faults, you know, but I wasn't. I don't want you to think that I was such a perfect individual that I was. But it was just somehow moving to look at the hills. I think I learned my love of them there more so than in Hazard, because we walked, as I said, Sunday afternoons with the teachers as chaperones, and so it's just a never-ending story. I can see so well now, after all these years, how it really molded me. They looked after our academic interests, see back importing the teachers and even the principal and so forth. And they built on my strength in English foundation that I had. And we at that time would have little contests, county contests. Every school would send them.
Mm-hmm.
And I always got to go in English. And then came the day of graduation. And I have a picture. Mike, your father was good enough to lend me the picture so I could have a copy of it made. And then from my copy, I've had copies made for the members of my class. And I look so sad because my mother was in the hospital at the time and in Lexington. But, you know, she had thought maybe she could have it in Louisville, and Miss Stone allowed her to come to Louisville and spend the night in her apartment with her the night before she was going to the hospital. But then for some reason she changed over to Lexington, and so nobody was at my graduation except my baby sister, Catherine, who would be a good one to interview, too. She lives in Abingdon. Just the three of us left, my little brother that we left at home. I so wish he could have gone with us. His life would have been so different. 31 years old when he died. And we're still grieving for George because he never had the privilege of going to Hanman and having these influences that I'm talking about. Then after Hanman, after I graduated, I can't remember for sure just how Miss Watts did it, but she told me at the end of high school that she would like to recommend me to Science Hill. Mm-hmm. Science Hill Preparatory School for Girls no longer exists. It was in Shelbyville, which is 30 miles from Louisville. And evidently, they allowed Hanman to recommend two girls to come down to, I didn't realize it at the time, to prepare for Wellesley. I didn't know that was in the picture at all. I just knew that I was going to get to go to another school. And my, that was a marvelous experience too. There I experienced a culture I had never seen before. Oh, yeah. It's a lovely family, wealthy girls throughout the South, but it was known as one of the best preparatory schools in the South, and its main purpose was to prepare you for college boards and get you ready for these, not all Ivy League colleges, but, you know, the better colleges. Yeah. And that was a really wonderful experience. I had to stay 2 years because I hadn't taken French at Hanman. See, I have made some mistakes in my life. I took Latin all for 3 years, I guess, through Cicero. And Wellesley required an ancient language and a modern. So I had to stay 2 years in order to get my 2 years of French at Science Hill. Most of them would just stay 1 year and go on. The girl that went with me was Frankie Smith, and that it was as I thought that they allowed two of us to come because then we had a little touch of home. But that was a marvelous experience. I just still didn't realize that I was there for Wellesley. That never entered my mind. And I remember when Miss Juliet called me in one day and said, and with the same atmosphere there, acceptance all the way, acceptance, acceptance. These two little girls in the mountains mixed in with all these others.
Yeah.
And, but I could build on my piano experience. I had 2 years of wonderful piano lessons. And Miss Juliet called me in and said, Ruby Dean, would you like to go to Wellesley? And I said, where is that? I never heard of it.
Well, you know.
I never heard of it. But the strange thing is, Cassie, you've never heard of this very often, but not many people get the choice of Wellesley or nothing. It was either Wellesley or nothing with me. And nobody had ever mentioned Berea, my going to Berea. I guess maybe we couldn't even afford to go to Berea. I guess my middle name is Cinderella. I guess I just wonder why all these opportunities, as you get at this age, you just wonder why. I believe, you see, that God kind of guides you in life, and I just don't think I deserve all that I have received of other people's help and their money, and I think that really is influencing me now because I have, for 48 years, I have taught something. Mm-hmm. For 48 years. For a while, when we were living near Washington, near my daughter, to help her with an unexpected grandbaby, I was teaching SAT prep and GED. Mm-hmm. But then I came back to Hazard after 9 years, and I've taught in the college English, again, English, of course. And then I stopped after my 2 full years to pull part-time because of my husband's. I was fearful for him living here alone mm-hmm. when everybody else was leaving for work, mm-hmm. that he might have an unfavorable visitor sometime. At the first of the month when he knew checks come, right. I began to think that I was putting him in danger. So I went part-time at the college. Mm-hmm. But then a few little health problems, not anything to mount much, but shortness of breath kind of scares me, but I turned down a class at the college this year. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to teach again, but I've just been substituting and adopted a little boy down at the alternative school. On March 16th, I asked the teacher if I could come and work with him one-on-one. I could see that he would never be able to do anything with the whole group.
Right.
So I gave about 50 or something hours just with him. Mm-hmm. And that's still an ongoing project. But I think all of this wanting to pay back, and also to be of help, you know, until I die, and I don't know how many more years I have, you know, when you're this old, it'll be 81 in August. But I'm not really worried about that. I've been blessed with health and strength, and maybe because of the good nutrition at Heinemann, you see. Because mm-hmm. my mother was a wonderful cook, and we were never hungry. But I think the grocery bills were hard to pay, but at home. But she always tried to have a balanced diet. But and then I think if you just stay busy, and if you teach school, I think teaching school keeps you young, so to speak.
In some ways, maybe.
It doesn't stop you from being 80, but I think it does something to your outlook and your own understanding and acceptance of people. I have a real tendency to look at the reason a child says the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Or if it comes from just asking a child a question, if he gives the wrong answer, then you think, well, now what's making him say that? What is in his mind? And I would never be able to be on a jury because they wouldn't want me on there, because I would always, even a child who, these shootings and so forth, I keep thinking, now what behind in this child's background caused him to do that? And it would just be hard for me to be a fair judge, I think. I just have to reason out, why do people do and talk the way they do.
How much do you think the influence, how you say you, because obviously you have a great love for teaching children and for helping. And, and this great appreciation just to see that others get an education. And what kind of influence, I guess, did being a Heinemann have on that? I mean, did that...
Well, I think that it was simply because I felt that we had wonderful teachers, and I was just naturally curious. I would just go to the library and they had a beautiful library in the new high school. I must tell you, when I started as a freshman, the high school was an old log house down by the cabin where they have the crafts now. Mm-hmm. I guess they've torn it down now. They used it for a shop a little bit, I think, after we moved out of it. But I remember the day when the students just picked up our chairs and books and moved it over ourselves. You know, they didn't have a big moving van. Everybody just pitched in, and we moved to new high school. And there was this big thing called a library, and it was a wonderful place to... My father's picture was hanging on the wall. He graduated in 1911. I saw someplace that not too long ago, that the first graduating class was 1902. I don't quite... He always thought that he and Miss Hale, she thought so too, that they were... she was the director of Home Place. Mm-hmm. She graduated in his class, and... that their class was the first one. Maybe there had been other graduates, but I don't believe a formal graduation.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
But he was very proud of that fact. I think I can remember just spending a study hall sitting and turning through an encyclopedia, you know. Mm-hmm. Can you see some teenager now doing that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think part of it, I guess, was my mental curiosity. They had just shown me that there was another world out there, you know, and that And of course, James Steele came right about in the 31, shortly after I got there, and he was a wonderful librarian. And the only thing I regret was he started teaching typing the year after I graduated, so I have never been to a college that or school that taught typing. So I still don't know the touch system. I just have my own. Even at Wellesley, I would have to borrow someone's typewriter to type my themes, you know. Uh-huh. And I hunt and peck at 3 o'clock in the morning and so forth. Uh-huh. It would have been so much better if I could have had typing. Uh-huh.
What do you remember about Mr. Steele being there since you were... He came about the time that you came there to go to school.
Yes.
What did you remember
with him being there? He was just as quiet... handsome young fellow, you know, and I think that he could have taken his pick from any of the female workers, but I don't know what the word is to describe Mr. Steele. He seems to have such inner depth and such a presence in the room. When you're in the room with him, his presence, you know, just fills it. I would see him walking on the campus, and sometimes, you know, with one of the ladies. But he didn't teach anything. He was just purely librarian the year I was there. So I don't know of him as a teacher, but he's very friendly with the... He lived in Eastover where the boys did, and I think he was a very good influence on them. In fact, I understand when in World War II, when he was in... Egypt, in that theater of the war, that he received a medal for being such a good influence on his fellow soldiers. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the name of the medal is. I didn't know the Army gave that, but he did receive that. And I didn't know, of course, that he was writing at all. Mm-hmm. That hadn't been, he was not writing at that time. Mm-hmm. I guess he started it later. But... I think I knew that he had, didn't he come and help in the Sunday school or Bible school or something in Hyman and then decided to come back? Mm-hmm. I dearly love him as a person. After I went to Wellesley, I memorized one of his short stories and I wrote him. I wasn't going to memorize it unless he knew about it.
Yeah.
And for a speech class. And we had to memorize a short story. Word for word, and I chose his, and I wrote him a letter, and I wish I'd saved the letter that he wrote back. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he would take time to write such a long letter back really impressed me. I think of the notes and letters I've gotten from students, and some of them maybe I never got around to answering, you know. Mm-hmm. But his influence on me, maybe just the fact that he was, he was not a lady, he was the man working there, and of course acceptance all the time. And I think I kind of wish, of course it's hindsight, of course education back then was not so involved in leadership, but I don't think I have ever been a leader. I think that we didn't have many opportunities to show our leadership. We were always in groups, you know. I don't think I have leadership, but I read once that a father writing about his daughter to try to get her in college said, I don't think of her as a leader, but she's a good follower. So I've always thought of myself as a follower, you know. If I have an idea, I don't know if that goes back to living with so many ladies and superiors. I just maybe felt I lack a little bit of the freedom to speak my own mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I should tell you this or not, but this was one time when Miss Watts called me in to talk to me, and I couldn't tell her the full truth about it. But you know, teenage girls, you know, when they're going through the big change in their lives, we didn't have money to buy the sanitary supplies. Mm-hmm. that you need. I believe that they supplied us with some sort of little clean cloths and so forth to use. But I had a highly prized box of brought-on sanitary supplies. Mm-hmm. I was living at practice home that year. And the worst thing you could do would be to take one of those because they were so cherished by you, you know. But yeah. A girl that I was living with did. And I made the comment, I just wish she would leave my things alone. And bless your heart, she grabbed a bottle of alcohol and came running with me and just furious and was going to hit me with this bottle of alcohol. And all I knew to do to protect myself was just fall back on the bed and maybe try to protect myself with my feet. Uh-huh. This is awful. I may not. And accidentally, I guess, I hit her ear. And I think she had ear trouble or something. Yeah. But anyway...
Oh, no.
The word got to me that I had burst her eardrum, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so Miss Watts called me up to talk to me, to just try to explain that I didn't have the courage to do it. I just took the rap myself.
Rather than tell her.
I don't know if that came from living in the settlement, didn't feel cowed down in any way, and yet I don't remember that I felt the real freedom to express. Now, this is not a criticism. Maybe it's just because I was so sensitive. Maybe it's a personal weakness of mine. I didn't have the... And even to this day, if you disagree with me, I'll kind of, pull in.
Yeah.
I think that's right now. I've noticed that I can't... Trace, well, it might be. You see, I was in three schools. At Science Hill, I was with wealthy girls, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the only time that it bothered me was when I was in a piano recital. I remember I played Trees that year, and I loved that song, Piano Solo. Mm-hmm. And I remember it's the only time I was ever really worried about being with wealthy people. Only dress I had to wear was this little organdy dress with the three tiers in the skirt that a cousin had made for me when I graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. I guess I wore it on class day or something. We had a class day, graduation class day. And I reached my breaking point after. I played it, and I played it beautifully, I think, but these wealthy girls' parents had come down from Chicago, and they looked like little princesses, you know, in theirs. And that was one time when it hit me that I was so different. But I decided I was never going to let it do it. I'm sobbing to my room afterwards. And that was a breakdown on my part. I'm not as proud of that. But I didn't feel that at Wells at all. Of course, Wellesley has a working dorm where, Science Hill controlled money at Wellesley. Mm-hmm. Their uncle had left money to Wellesley to be used for girls that Science Hill recommended. Mm-hmm. And so I could not live in the working dorm because my scholarship was full, you see. Mm-hmm. It had to be for people who really needed it. But I never felt that anymore. In fact, I think that people who've been wealthy all their lives and have never been associated with poor people, they just think everybody has money, you know,
exactly.
Someplace.
Yeah.
So they don't really know about it. And I had a job at Wellesley of going, they would put their shoes that needed to go to the shoe shop outside their door, you know, and I would go down the hall saying, shoes for Alexander's, and they would, if they didn't have them out, they would bring them out, and then I would get a commission, you see, I would take them down. And so... I learned very quickly that wealth. I visited once in the home of a very rich Wells. I went home with a lovely girl from Buffalo one spring vacation when I didn't have the money to come home on. And I visited a very rich. She took me over to see our mutual friend. And I'm talking about wealth where the maid comes in and fluffs your pillows with the little white cap and the black uniform and put your orange juice on the table. But that was an unhappy home. Mm-hmm. That was an unhappy home. And I learned early that money does not necessarily make a happy home. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe Heinemann kept me from marrying in New England when I was there in college. You know, we had, it was a girls' school, of course, then. I think boys attend now, but don't live there. But the campus was full, swarming with boys on weekends, you know, from all these New England colleges. And there were opportunities, but I knew all the time that I did not want to try to fit into a culture that wasn't mine. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed every day, the beautiful campus. My daughter visited Wellesley campus and said, "Mother, it's the most beautiful campus I've ever seen." And I said, "I've been trying to tell you, honey." And she took a video of it to let me. I've never been back since. No, I don't. You see, I knew I was, I keep up with them. I write regularly to some of them, but I was just passing. It was a chapter in my life where I was just passing through, and I knew that I was going to end up back in Eastern Kentucky. It's where I felt at home. I have seen how, you know, movies and so forth have been made of how it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
An actress, I think, from Harlan tried that, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can mix cultures. But
it's hard, I think. It'd be hard.
Well, anyway, down in Eastern Kentucky was a nice young man called Everett Allen who was working at Home Place. He graduated from Berea in 31, mm-hmm. a major in chemistry, straight A's, and came to visit his, he graduated in 31, and in between that time he came to visit Home Place,
mm-hmm.
you know where that is. And his sister was working there, and so Miss Hale asked him if he would come and help her with the library project that she was getting started, and so he came in 33 and stayed 38 years.
Hmm.
And after we were married, I knew that whatever happened to our marriage, it could not affect his wonderful work.
Hmm.
We absolutely could not let his beautiful work stop. Hmm. Such feedback as he had. We'd go to Walmart, the girl in layaway would say, "Aren't you the book man who used to bring me books?"
Mm-hmm.
And Cassie, honey, this is the sweetest story. The last, on the day that he died, the little nurse that gave him his last bath, she said, "I think, Ms. Allen, if it's all right with you, I'll bathe him. I believe if we move him around a little, it'll make him feel better."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Anything that you think." And so as she was working, I said, I didn't think he could hear me. I said, "There are a lot of people going to have fond memories of this man." And she said, "I'm going to have fond memories of this man. He used to save back the nursing books for me on his book truck, and I read these nursing books, and here she is, a nurse, you see." So he was a true educator,
mm-hmm.
and I finally convinced the Home Place board of that. He was more than a truck driver, you know. He knew his books, but more than that, he knew what is education unless you can find out the abilities of children, the level of reading, and find out their interests and fit the book to the child.
Right.
That's education.
Yeah.
So many have said. The pest man came, you know, in these old homes you have spraying occasionally.
Uh-huh.
He said, "Mr. Allen, you used to save me the Cowboy Sam books. You used to save me the Bye. Is he here, honey?"
It was nice to meet you.
"Norma, honey, try to get some rest.
Yeah.
And thanks again. Thanks again." You know how I appreciate it. Couldn't do without you.
Well, this is just, you give me so much information. I don't know. I'm going to stop it just for a second. Okay, go ahead.
Another spot of time I guess I should have mentioned is waiting for time to actually enter the dining room at Orchard House. And the teachers would all be out there waiting with us. And Miss Watts and Miss Stone would have to make the walk, you know, everybody, three times a day, down and back. And it was it was a good exercise, but we hadn't heard much about exercise then. I used to think how hard it was on them. But that was a time of close association with the teachers too. Mm-hmm. I think they, without feeling superior or anything, they would just talk to us and bond with us even closer. In the dining room, you just knew the one at the head of the table and the one at the foot of the table. But such wonderful, happy memories. And I guess I can tell you another, they not only took care of our, I could talk all day about Hyman, they took care of us academically with our study halls, mm-hmm. our libraries, our reading, our teachers, imported teachers, that were just wonderful people in the first place. I'm sure they didn't make very much money, mm-hmm. but they came for practically nothing, and they were highly dedicated people then to begin with, fine characters. They took care not only of the academic, and I've mentioned the spiritual, and all these extra kindnesses that they did for us, and helping us to appreciate nature by going up into the hills, walking in the hills with us. But they also helped us.
Okay, now we can get started.
Okay. Tell me when.
Oh, you're, go ahead.
At the end of the other tape, I was kind of summing up how Hyman had helped us academically and spiritually and in our love of nature and so forth, but I failed to say that they looked after our health needs too. Mm-hmm. And my grandson has just gone through this horrible experience with abscess tonsils at the age 18, but fortunately for me, the Hyman brought in doctors, I suppose, from Louisville, on a volunteer basis, I feel sure, and they would come in and just remove the tonsils. We had a resident nurse at Hyman. She lived in the hospital, and you would go to her for minor things, and then she would go to the doctor in town, if calling him in if we needed anything that she couldn't give us. His name was Dr. Duke. He was a saint and worked closely with Miss Watts. Mm-hmm. That was a wonderful, the way Miss Watts and Miss Stone had this wonderful relationship with the town. That's in the whole know-how. They really had expertise, and I see that now. I wasn't aware of that when I was there, but the way they, as I had said, brought in the teachers, and then how they let us go two by two to Science Hill rather than alone, and then how they, but this is the most wonderful service that they rendered for us. They brought in these doctors from Louisville to remove tonsils, and I have to tell you the method, because now with all of our technology of removing tonsils, but this one worked. The first that we would line up, the nurse evidently had checked her, maybe the resident doctor in Hyman had looked at our tonsils and decided that we need to have them taken out. And then we would go in one by one and let them inject. And it's, the needle to me looked a yard long. I'm sure it was not quite that, but they would inject each tonsil with a deadening. Mm-hmm. And you sat, the main doctor, who was the surgeon, just little girls, you know, and you would sit between his knees as close as you could get to him. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Duke, this Hyman doctor, would hold your head for you, help you steady the head, you know, he wasn't holding you down or anything. But then they would inject this, some kind of anesthesia in your tonsils, and then you would go back in the hallway of the hospital to wait your turn to have them removed. And as you, others would be following you to go in and get this injection, and all this time your tonsils would just be, it felt as if they were just swelling up, and you were just thought you were going to choke to death. Oh. So the time it came for you to go in to get them cut out, you went willingly, because you felt as if you were going to. But I think that I went when I was 11. I'm not sure. It must have been the next year that I had mine out. But then you would go in and sit the same way. And this lovely, kind doctor, who evidently was volunteering his services, and the nurses, he brought his own nurses, maybe two or three doctors, but I just had the one. And then he just cut them out. And mine were so large that they just showed them all over the hospital.
Wow.
So that's another little, I had to get my fame in there too. I'm famous for, but then he said, now let's look up and see if you have any adenoids. And of course he knew I had some, and so he clipped them out without anesthesia. I can still feel that little twitch.
Oh.
But now that was a real service, because I had been sick with those things at home. And Hazard, I remember one, the infection from them, I think. One morning I woke up and I couldn't lift either leg off the bed, except my left leg I could lift about an inch off the bed. And I'm sure that that was from those infected tonsils. And we just didn't have the money to go in for surgery or anything. People didn't talk much about tonsils. But I was so relieved to get rid of those. And then they also gave us what they called hookworm treatments. You know, I don't remember going barefoot when I was that old in the summertime, but I guess that was a very good thing, too. There came a time when none of us really liked it, but you prepared a specimen, and they would just give you the hookworm treatments if you needed them.
Yeah.
And that was a weekend affair, and I could still taste the medicine. And Monday morning, when it came time to eat, you were ready for something to eat, you know, but I guess it was necessary.
But I'd say that really people had never, didn't really have that kind of health care before.
That's right, and everybody went barefoot. When I was little, you just put your shoes away when school went out, and then you got new shoes when school started, you know, and of course, except on Sunday when you dressed up, you had shoes, but you just didn't wear them. And so that was something I wanted to put in, and it was really wonderful. They looked out for the whole child. We talk about the whole child now. Well, Hyman really looked out for the whole child.
That's something.
Uh-huh.
What do you think, I guess, in your opinion, after, you know, we've talked about all these experiences you had, and of course, if there's anything else, you know, as we're talking, you just feel free to put it in, that's fine. But how do you feel about the settlement's impact on this area as a whole, from the educational point of view, and just, you know, it's impacted Hyman and Knott County, but how has it affected just the whole area from your experience from being there, being a part of it? What do you think about it, kind of?
Oh, I think that its effect was tremendous. I think that the way they were able to accept children, lift them out of their environment and bring them into a healthy, safe, by healthy I mean well-nourished, you know, and sanitary conditions, and it was just wonderful. But you have to remember, the impact then was not publicized as much as it would as it is now. It seems to me that with the writers and all the visitors coming in, you've got to remember that there were no telephones.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Everett and I married in 1940, there was no telephone between here and Troublesome, Home Place Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
There was no telephone, even. And Miss Watts, the radio was just coming in, and that's when she would call us down and help us listen to Big Ben. And we're very proud of that little box radio, you know. But silently, it was, I guess, you know what Foxfire is. I think really Hammond was just there, and it was like in a, like Foxfire in a dark, damp forest, and yet it was just taking root in so many people's lives, and then they're the ones that have made the impact then. But they were the instigators. And just think of the hundreds of children that they have, whose lives they got them from their own environments at home and got them up and got them on their way.
Mm-hmm.
I wish, and there were no guidance counselors then, you see.
Mm-hmm.
No. I think somebody said, I don't think there were any organized cheerleaders even. We had the yellow jackets, you know, and we would walk over to the ball games in the gym of the new high school. But when I was there, it was an entirely different society. But their impact, at the time was not publicized that much because there was no television,
right.
No communication. The only people who knew about it was the fathers and parents of the children. And then, but my, just think of the impact now. It was just slowly growing and glowing just the way foxfire does, and then it became brilliant in the lives of the students that went on out, because somehow their commitment, even Ms. Stone's and Ms. Watts' commitment, not aside from all that staff, you picked that up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to try to wave any flags here, but I really do think that inside I have a deep debt of gratitude that I'm trying to pay, but trying to, well, I'm, like for instance, I have just stopped working with my little boy one-on-one since March 16th. Before that, I was substituting in all of the, whoever called, you know,
mm-hmm.
Perry County. I just want to do everything I can in the years left.
Right.
I've always had that feeling of giving of myself, because I saw it so at Hyman in them, you see. They never told you, never talked about it. There's no guidance counselor to help you to know what characteristics you should have. You just picked it up from them. And that was the impact on the students, a big impact. But newspapers were not,
oh, yeah,
not that widespread. I'm sure there wasn't the Troublesome Creek Times,
mm-mm.
Nor had, I can remember, as I was older, there was a Hazard paper. But the Cincinnati Post, I can remember that. That's mm-hmm. what we all liked the funniest in. We didn't get that at Hyman, but in the summertime, we'd read the funniest in the Cincinnati Post, which I don't know what the price of it would have been, but an entirely different era when you could buy the best pair of shoes would cost $4.95, you know. Pound of Maxwell House coffee, 35 cents, even when we were married. In 1940, an A&P coffee just cost 21 cents a pound, so we drank A&P coffee. You don't get it for that now?
Mm-mm.
So it was an entirely different era, but it was, in a way, it was a wonderful era, because you were in a wonderful place, and you were finding out, and being trained, you were finding out what you were good for, and having all this wonderful training and inspiration because of their inspiration. But the impact now, as far as communication is concerned, can't really be compared.
Exactly, yeah.
Of course, the women's clubs that influenced Miss Stone to come and so forth, I'm sure that they knew all about that. Now,
there
was a rivalry between Hyman and Caney. We didn't call it Alice Lloyd then.
Mm-hmm.
Because we felt that Caney's method of raising funds was unethical.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this girl with whom I had a little run-in about my sanitary supplies had been on one of their crusades, and I have her word for it that she had to tell things that were not really true. She had to exaggerate, you know.
And do you feel that ever happened at Hyman?
Oh, no, I do not. There were never any crusades at Hyman.
Mm-hmm.
I think there have to be letters asking politely for contributions, but never any exploiting children in a way. I think it's exploitation in a way, sending them to exaggerate and tell things that were exaggerated and maybe half true.
Mm-hmm.
Because Eunice, the one that, but I regret that I've always been a little timid to really speak my mind and to defend myself, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where that came from. I don't know. But I know I never... I wish I had told the truth of that to Miss Watts when I was in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, another thing, Miss Watts was so able to... She understood. She and Miss Stone were both accepting. Now, we didn't see Miss Stone much. She came in the summer and relieved Miss Watts.
Mm-hmm.
But when Miss Watts came back, she came about her birthday on May 1st, and we danced the Maypole for her and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, she was an awesome figure. She just looked like a queen, you know, and always lace. But she didn't finish at Wellesley, and Wellesley itself wondered why I was talking with an office there. And she said, we just wish we knew. It must have been because after she heard of the opportunities here, she decided she'd just finished the 3 years there. Mm-hmm. But when I was at Wellesley, she came to visit me. Mm-hmm. She came to Wellesley. The little town is Wellesley. And she came to my dorm room, and some friends had some teacups and goodies and helped me give her a little tea party, you know. Mm-hmm. And they came in and met her. And I know she left quite a bit of money to Wellesley, $250,000, I think. And I always kind of wondered about that. I don't. I think the hardest thing of all was getting scholarships to go someplace and not having the clothes or the supplies to go on. But the church women down here gave me a wonderful shower before I went to Wellesley. Hyndman gave me. One thing I remember, it was a trunk that wouldn't latch. You know, the little tongue wouldn't go in. Everybody had trunks in those days.
Yeah.
And I had the neighbor fella gave me a big, he just tied it around with a great big, something like the Navy uses them big old ropes, you know. And that was the trunk I used all through Wellesley. It was put in the attic, you know.
Yeah.
I was a little bit embarrassed by that, but you learn your own acceptance when you don't. When one thing outweighs the other, it was more important to me to stay in Wellesley and get prepared to teach and to help the situation at home than it was to worry about a trunk.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn to...
Yeah, that would definitely be true.
Cassie, I'm afraid I have kept you too long.
No, you haven't kept me too long.